You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hey, Launch Street, Tamara here. I am so excited to connect with you today and bring you this double value podcast. You'll see what I mean in a minute. In fact, let me set the stage. So as you all know, my book is filled with everyday innovators, people inside organizations doing their job, responsible for everything from sales and marketing to operations, project management. In fact, in my introduction, I talk about the fact that you won't find stories of Steve Jobs, Einstein, Elon Musk, Oprah, Beyonce, J.K. Rowling, whatever. I love them all. And it's not because they aren't innovators. They are. And I admire their brains and their contributions greatly. I don't mention them because they aren't us. They aren't the everyday people out there grinding away. And as neuroscientist Dr. Rex Young told me when I interviewed him when I was doing research for the book, he said, Tamara, genius is rare, but creativity is common. And that's why I am all about the everyday innovator. I think we need to stop comparing ourselves to other people. We need to unleash the innovation in ourselves in a way that's unique to us. In fact, I used to try so hard, you know, I'd see these Silicon Valley innovators on the cover of the magazines and it'd be like, this one meditates for 10 minutes every day at 6 a.m. exactly. And this one always thinks outside the box and this one blah, blah, blah. And I would try to be like them and it never worked. And it really wasn't until I recognized that I need to innovate in my way that it actually started to really happen when the magic started to sparkle all around me. And that's why my book, Innovation is Everybody's Business, is all about all of us. And that's what brings me to today's guest, because he is featured in my book and has a new book coming out called Fearless Innovation. His name is Alex Goryachev, and he's also the Cisco's Senior Director of Innovation Strategy and Programs. So here's how today's a double bonus, extra value, bring it home kind of podcast. So a while back, I interviewed Alex for the book and I recorded it. And he's given me permission to release it. So the first part, you're going to hear a short story from Alex where we dig into how he realized he was looking for innovation in the wrong place, outside the organization, instead of inside the four walls, and the brave person that pointed that out to him. Then I'm going to interview him about his book, Fearless Innovation. So here's the thing I so appreciate about Alex, and I think you will too after listening to this podcast. He has incredible insight and ideas, and he really does understand how to bring out, you know, what we call at Launch Street human-centered innovation. But we have this really raw conversation about how to quantify the impact of inaction, right? When you don't shift and you don't change. But so we come in this conversation, though, that's really just totally transparent. We come to the realization that A, we don't have the answer. And B, I think more importantly, maybe I was asking the wrong question. I think it's so important when you are pivoting, growing, adapting, dealing with a massive changes like we are right now that just hit us upside the head, to recognize and admit that you don't know everything, more so than we even normally do. And honestly, those that say they have all the answers are usually full of total BS. So Alex shares incredible insights in this podcast, this double whammy podcast. So let's get to it. And oh yeah, don't forget to go order my book and his book on Amazon. All right, let's get to it.
Yes, I mean, what I do primarily is large customer, is large company transformation, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about changing either processes or the mindset of people or enabling others, right? So when I think about the kind of the domains in which I work, these are opening up innovation centers. Mm-hmm. And really, the way we can accelerate sales and partner with the ecosystem. And the second one is really around enabling employees to innovate. So perhaps I tell you one story, which I would call an where I think you will have a tie to the person and it will have an aha moment.
Awesome.
Right. So, and the moment is very simple. For a number of years, I've been running a startup engagement for Cisco. And as part of that engagement, every year I would run a startup challenge or competition, and I would line up a very impressive portfolio of support for startups, right? Just go online, share your ideas, tell us what you're working on, and if we pick your company to collaborate with, you'll get equipment, mentorship, access to our facilities, right, the Innovation Center support, yada, yada, yada. And the response was tremendous. And what I've started to notice is that some of our employees are responding, right? And every year they would, they would respond, and I would delete the entry and say, hey, sorry, you're ineligible. And one day someone really got across to me, and she was pretty verbal about, like, Alex, do you understand what you're doing is stupid? Because basically the corporate response is, hey, you're already at Cisco, you're already an innovator. So are you telling me that in order to give my best idea to the company, I actually need to quit it? And then I would,
'cause you had to be from the outside.
Yeah, you had to be from the outside. Because technically I'm not eligible, but just tell me, if I were to quit the company and have my own startup, can I participate? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. But the stupidity of this kind of, it really kind of stuck with me. So I've started to look around, and then I realized that there's no vehicle, right? There is no vehicle for ideas to be brought in for internal ideas. And there's plenty of investment that's going to the outside world, where you and I know, you talked about the operational efficiency, right? One of the biggest gains that a company can have from innovation is from process improvements, right? Because we know the stupid things that we do.
Right, and, over and over again.
Over and over again. And if we stop doing stupid things, the savings are phenomenal. So, personally, I say there's way more savings in not doing stupid things than chasing a billion-dollar idea. In fact, chasing a billion-dollar idea could be one of those stupid things, right?
Totally.
Yeah. So we did start this process. We created an internal vehicle. I looked at startups that were founded by Cisco, let's call them Cisco alumni. I'm like, oh my God, there's a lot of people that are exiting Cisco and starting businesses, which is good, right? I mean, it's okay. But maybe we should keep some of them, right? Or provide them a better experience. So we created this vehicle. I think now we're in year five. Employees love it. It's cross-referenced. We got the business on board. And the one thing that we really did, which I'm really proud of, is we have early stage seed fund at Cisco, and let's say the employees have a good idea and they went through the process, and there's clearly, well, it's not really a direct match with Cisco, but there might be some interest. And sometimes, they might want to choose to exit the company and pursue it somewhere else. So in this case, we would talk to them about potential seed investment. So it's a full circle, right? If you think about it, we're doing something for startups, not doing anything for employees, and now we've created this thing that really that kind of really meets the need. And and I must tell you that this the aha moment was that we're not why are we asking those startups? We have the employees that actually know way more, at least about the stupid things that we're doing.
I want to loop back for a second on that.
Sure.
I think that's a really powerful story, especially of kind of looking inward for innovation kind of right in front of you versus, let's go far off into far off lands and see what we can find, because there's none here where we're actually doing the work. When that person came to you and was like, hey, like, what the heck? Why don't you look internally? I'm curious how you received it and then what you did next.
Well, I received this as I received this in a way that somebody who's married to an attorney would. I said, thank you so much for sharing according to the terms and condition, page 17, right? But as I was saying this, I realized that, the terms and conditions better be null and void.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, like, there's a message, right? And the message when you message employees, right, you need to make sure that you stick to the party line, right? But then I took that comment very seriously, and I started zigging. And then when I realized that we really do not have a vehicle, and then that there are people that exited the company in the past and started businesses, right? It kind of clicked. And then I went to HR, and they embraced this.
Yeah. And out of curiosity, and I'm sure it's huge, what was the impact of making that change? Not just on the bottom line, but I would imagine it's on employee engagement too.
Oh, this is – so actually the way I would tie this back is – you know, for the last several years, I'm privileged to read some of the raw data that comes from the Great Places to Work employee surveys. And people consistently rate Cisco. So when they talk about their experience at Cisco, you know, things like benefits or compensation, it's all on top, right? But the other thing that's on top of is my innovation. And when I say innovation, it's not that somebody does some cool thing somewhere and we're so proud that he's in our company. It's about the fact that if I have an idea, my voice matters.
Yeah.
And I can do something about it.
Yep.
And the real outcome, and especially for the technological company, right? By bringing this kind of operational angle of everything is innovation, right? No, I don't know, shorter line in the cafeteria is an innovation. We actually no longer have two classes of employees, innovators and not innovators, right? Because in a normal company, if you're in engineering, you're an innovator, but God forbid you're in accounting.
Right.
Right. So I think it's a better, not only it's a better employee experience, but actually it's the right thing to do.
Well, there's so many things I love, Alex, about this story. And one of the things I'll say is I'm with you. I am one of my biggest pet peeves, or one of the traps I think we fall into, is siloing innovation. And I think there's actually a massive detriment to everybody else. Not only are we only tapping 6, 12, 100 people out of an organization of whatever, you know, tens of thousands, but we're also telling everybody else, not you, just those people over there. You don't get to know, you're not worth it, but they are. But the other thing I loved about your story is that it goes back to a person, you, well, two people, and the person who said something to you. And I think we sometimes forget that those great innovations, and again, to your point, it's not necessarily the technological advancements. It's a process improvement, a different way of thinking about it. But that comes back to kind of two people, someone who said something and someone who did something about it. And that's awesome.
Right. Thank you. And, you know, the other thing that I really want to mention here is when you think about stories stories like this, we're often, to your point, we're often siloing innovation because it's faster.
Yeah.
And I agree, sometimes it's faster to get things done if it's in a silo. But long term, we will all pay the price.
Yeah.
So sometimes slower.
Well said.
Slower is better at least for the large company, because getting, you know, you've talked about the stakeholders, getting stakeholders on board matters the most, right? I can go right now in my house and go, and it's faster for me to repaint the wall. And I know that's the color that my wife will like, but I probably need to get her on board first.
Right.
And that might take some time, but in the result, we'll have a painted wall and everybody would be happy. So faster is not always better. That's the other approach to this.
Alex, that was a phenomenal story. Like, way to crush it out of the gate.
I'm glad you like it.
Alex, how great to talk to you again. I'm so looking forward to this conversation on so many levels.
Likewise, you know, it's never been a better time to innovate, right? Or for innovators to meet and talk about innovation.
Right, exactly. This is like manna from heaven for us. So I wanted to start this conversation with the situation, the context that we're in now. So we are recording this right in the throes of a pretty big upheaval, right? We've got this COVID-19 pandemic. If you're listening to this in the future, check it out. It changed everything for a lot of people. So I want to start by talking about innovation in the context of where we are today in the throes of this pandemic. Talk to me about how you think about innovation in a time like this.
I think this is innovation, right? Everywhere, every day, we are seeing businesses being innovative, right? And we're seeing every single vertical, every single enterprise, every single family, every single business, governments being innovative, and they're innovating, and they're through trial and error, and they're doing it nonstop. So, I mean, this is what innovation should be, right? I wish the circumstances would not be so dramatic. But everywhere I look at, I see innovation.
So, you know, it's interesting you say that about kind of the situation being so dramatic. I was telling a colleague yesterday that I felt like, and you and I were talking about this just for a moment offline, I think innovation is always important. You know, we are dealing with rapid change, accelerated change, disruptive innovation, like things are happening all the time. And it just feels like we hit like the hockey stick of the curve in terms of change and having to deal. And what I'm seeing on the bright side is a lot of industries and businesses that could found all the reasons not to innovate or the reasons why they couldn't go fast in the innovation, be able to do what they said they couldn't do in years overnight. So, and I'm just going to use telehealth as my example. You know, that was one of those things that was like teetering along, and all of a sudden that becomes something that's not only possible, but people are actually benefiting from, like, better than having to go to the doctor. Not in all cases, but in some. So it's interesting for me, and I'd love to get your perspective to see how not only are people finding innovation, but that kind of pulling out of the rug from under, and that urgency is driving it in a speed that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So, I mean, generally, right, I always like to compare the kind of the innovation pyramid with the Maslow hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. And right now we're all fighting for our survival, and which forces people like you and me, our neighbors, our friends, and people that are on the corporate boards to do all the same, right? So typically, you see in a traditional environment, right, you see a lot of disengagement. And now it seems that everybody is engaged. And I must tell you, like you've talked about the telehealth, a lot of it was regulatory, right? We could argue that technology existed for a long time. But now I feel for the first time in humanity, we're really all of us are working on solving one problem. And it's really great to see that both private industry and the government and
everybody,
and consumers, all of us are coming together. We may disagree about certain things, but we want the same outcome.
Isn't that interesting? I hadn't thought about that before. That not only is innovation coming from the business, but it's coming from every place working together versus us kind of battling each other a little bit.
Yes, I mean, if you recall, there used to be and still is a very popular concept of open innovation. Now it's truly open innovation, right? Because any opinion matters, and it doesn't really, you know, matter what resources you have. It's all about the potential of what you can deliver, and we're seeing a lot of non-traditional players that are trying to help each other, right? That are working together across the whenever these are political lines or industry lines or competitive lines, trying to go and drive better outcomes for everybody. So again, it's when I think about what this makes possible, I have no doubt that we will solve this crisis together. You know, we can all talk about when and how this will change our life in the future. And I'm sure it will. But once we solve this problem, I think nothing is unsolvable, right? We can solve a lot of problems, be that societal problems, be that technological problems, be that the environment or social justice.
I want to dig into your book in a second, too, because this is the perfect time to be having this conversation. And I say that, same with the Manna from Heaven Common, knowing that this is very difficult for a lot of people. This is not, you know, everybody's happy about the opportunities it creates. There's a lot of people struggling with jobs and work. And it is a great time to go, how do I find my new relevancy and my new value? And how do I shift my thinking to find the new opportunities out there? I do think there's something really important about what you're saying around the solidarity behind it that we really haven't seen since World War II. And even then it was a little bit siloed because we weren't as connected as we are today. And I am very curious to see moving forward if we maintain that, because if we do, to your point, I think we can actually solve a lot more problems.
Yeah. So I, when we started talking offline, I think I mentioned that I've been working remotely for the last 7 years, and I have a global team. Yet I've learned more about my coworkers and about their day-to-day struggles and just things. More in the last couple of weeks than I ever did in 7 years, right? I check in with people daily, and it's not about the project. It's not about the TCP report or whatever that is, right? Is, are you doing okay? How is your family? Do you need anything? And we, as the neighbors, are so connected. I mean, a great example is there's this community site or application called Nextdoor. And I go from Nextdoor, and it's just people helping people. Hey, I've got extra toilet paper. Would you like some? Right. And like literally there's people that are so kind to each other and they're staying connected. And honestly, I don't know about the dating and in the life of, in the, during the social isolation time. But aside from that, I think there's a lot of connection between the people and that virtual connection.
Alex, I will tell you all about online dating in a quarantine world offline because it's pretty funny. But we'll stick to business and some other things for this conversation.
All right.
So I want to dig into your book because I think it is, I mean, we had planned this conversation, I think, before all this happened, but it makes it even more relevant, in my opinion. And your work is phenomenal. For those listening on Launch Street, if you're new, Alex has been on before because he's fantastic. And there's a whole story about him in my upcoming book because I thought what he did was so brilliant and some of the outcomes from it. And such a great example of unlocking innovation. So let's dig into your new book, which is Fearless Innovation. You summarize chapter one with the title, Innovation Waits for No One, which feels so appropriate right now. So talk more about that. Why is that the summary of chapter one?
Well, because at the end of the day, right, change happens no matter whenever we want it or not, right? I grew up in a country that no longer exists, which is the Soviet Union. And practically overnight, it happened. And by the way, for those of you or listeners that are fans of history, there hasn't been a single intelligence report or a committee that said, hey, oh, by the way, this is happening, right? Nobody could have predicted the collapse of the Soviet Union. And it just happened overnight. And a lot of people are still struggling with this, right? And what I've learned personally from that experience, and I was about 14 years old, is that, look, change happens, and it just happens overnight, and sometimes you don't know why. And the only way to go and move forward is pick yourself up and think about how to build on this, right? And obviously, that's a very easy thing to say for a 14-year-old, right, with a small allowance from a parent versus somebody with a job who just lost an entire job and a purpose in life. I think as we were looking into year 2020, right, all of us were bombarded by what are your top predictions for 2020? And everybody said, well, the cars would fly or this or that.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know what my predictions were. I bet I've had some. I must tell you that they were all wrong, right? Because this innovation happened and it proved instantly how connected we all are, and it just changed the world completely.
So there's this.
And we couldn't predict it.
No, you're right. It's funny. I think all of us, well, if you look at any of our vision boards, this was certainly not on there. But I think you're right. I think this was one of those things that took most of us by surprise. So what is your advice then for being the person or being the team and the company that maybe isn't ready for it when it happens, but is ready to deal with it when it happens, which I think are actually two very different things?
I would say learn from small businesses, because small businesses are startups. And if I look at the way the small businesses, be that restaurants or dry cleaners or just the businesses, how they're experimenting with new business models and in my city and how fast they are to respond to new regulations and laws and how agile, I even hate using this word, but how agile they are in response and how they keep reinventing themselves every day. It's pretty incredible, right? And I mean, any big corporation was a startup or a small business at a certain point, right? But I think it's just about being serving the needs of employees, and I would put employees first, and communities and customers, right? Well, because if I think about our organizations, we're collections of people, right? And it's important that we've got each other's backs. And if we don't have the backs of our fellow employees, we will never be able to have the backs of our customers.
Well, and I think to your point earlier, too, about knowing your colleagues and your team better than you ever have really plays into that well, because now you have a level, I would assume, right, a level of trust and rapport and maybe some vulnerability, because we all have to put down the masks a little bit right now. You know, our kids interrupt us in conference calls. The dog barks. We've got to put dishes away at the same time. Like, you know, things are different right now, and we have a little bit more willingness to be a little bit more real at the same time.
Yes, and I hope that will stay, right? Because yeah. I'm sure you follow HR and kind of the latest trends of bring your whole self to work. Well, now we've brought our whole family, our work to our entire family, right? It's no longer bring your kids to work day, right? It's right. Bring your work kids weeks or months, right?
Right.
And it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
It is pretty incredible.
So I want to bring it kind of to your point about employees first. I want to bring it back to teams and silos for a second, because one of the things I know that you are very good at and have a lot of keep a top priority for is making sure that, you know, those silos that really hinder innovation, hinder people's ability to collaborate, get in the way of being productive, that they really break down. Talk to me a little bit about, just to start, some of the negative impacts of silos, because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in times like now too, it's not only dangerous on a normal day, as I guess without any other way to say it, but it really hinders our ability to adapt and change, which we need now more so than ever.
Yeah, and then when you think about the silos, right, typically big corporations are siloed. And if I think about silos, it's not necessarily a byproduct of size. It's a byproduct of politics and power. And it comes down to information sharing, because information is power. Right. And I mean, when I think about a startup versus big corporation, the only difference to me is startup is a team sport.
Right.
And a corporation is a political process.
Right.
And every time that you have a political process, there are silos. And I think that what we're seeing right now is there are less and less and less silos. Mm. And the reason there are less silos is because there's so much transparency. There's so much willingness to work together. There's a need for urgency, and that demands transparency. And I think you just talked about us kind of being authentic with our coworkers and ourselves. And I think when we look at how the industry is collaborating on trying to figure out vaccines, or how people are speaking out about lack of equipment, and how, you know, tech companies are jumping in to help, and all the other players, that is all about breaking those silos whenever these are organizational or industrial or political. And that's all because we're honest, we're vulnerable, and we're transparent. And we operate for a bigger purpose, which is really making sure that we all survive this, right? And we're healthy, and so are our kids and our parents.
Here's my question for you on that. Taking a note as you were talking, there were two things that really spoke to me as you were saying that about, and spoke to me in the sense of, what are things that we need to make sure we keep when this kind of passes, right? Because we will solve this and we will move past it. But to your point, there are things that are good that are coming out of it. And there's three that came out of it. And I'd love to hear from your perspective as a leader, and when you think about your book, Fearless Innovation, how to keep these three going. So one of them is, you mentioned having a purpose, a bigger purpose, like really something that we rally behind. The second was transparency, kind of that whole self, and then authenticity, although I think they kind of go hand in hand. How do you as a leader make sure that when this settles and we move to the next stage, that we don't lose those good things that came out of it?
You know, it's, I think it's about, I think it's about bigger purpose, right? Because if I think about, I don't think we'll lose authenticity. I don't think we'll lose transparency. In fact, there's right now, there's a lot of dialogue about data privacy and other things, right? And do we really, would we need to be as transparent as, you know, as we move on from this crisis with our data? But when we think about, yeah, I think it's about bigger purpose, because when I think about the conscious corporations or corporations that say they care about communities and their stakeholders and employees as much as they care about their shareholders, wonderful things happen, right? In my book, I talk about the B Corporation movement, and I'm seeing B Corps behave very differently towards their employees, right? And in the way that they fundraise for them, in the way that they furlough them, and there's so many different things that are happening. And I think the companies that have a bigger purpose, or they have shared values with their communities, they will always come out better.
Yeah. So I want to dig into chapter 4 in your book, because innovation is not disruption. And I really want to dig into this because I think oftentimes we get stuck in this trap of like, I've got to think disruptively. I've got to be disruptive. I've got to, you know, shake it up. And you talk about not thinking disruptively and instead thinking pragmatically, which I think in some ways sounds counter to all the narratives out there. How does being pragmatic actually unlock innovation?
Well, I think pragmatic begins with solving a problem, right? I see a lot of innovation efforts where people say, well, how about we create a $1 billion idea, right? I haven't seen a lot of those efforts be successful, but probably if I take a calculator and start just going after public data sources, I would probably see hundreds of billions of dollars or trillions wasted on chasing $1 billion ideas.
For sure.
Right? So to me, I think innovation is about pragmatic, because solving a problem is pragmatic, right? Like if we think about what we are facing today, are we really chasing $1 billion ideas? No, we're trying to solve
a
very pragmatic problem.
Yeah.
Right? Which is a very pragmatic problem. And we break it into small and measurable milestones, which is exactly what I think about. Because when I look at pragmatic innovation, it has to have a metric, right? And at the end of the day, it's about how do we impact that metric, right? Today, that metric you talked about, staying alive or getting our, you know, food and groceries to elderly, or how do we make sure that our businesses can reopen safely? That's pragmatic, and it has a clear purpose, a clear metric, and a clear outcome. And that's what I call pragmatic innovation. Now, there's this whole world of invention, and I have nothing against that, and I really respect inventors, but I would say these are slightly different things. Inventions, they don't have to be pragmatic, right? In fact, if you look at the patent base in the U.S., most of the patents have never been commercialized, right? So again, but if I think about innovation, anywhere we work, be that a city and a small business or a country or a big corporation, we exist to serve our stakeholders. And you and I talked about that it's not only our shareholders, it's our communities, it's our employees.
Right.
So thinking pragmatically on how to fix that their problems or create more opportunities is what innovation is.
So this is a bit of a loaded question, of course, coming from me. Mm-hmm. But do you think that giving your team the, I don't want to say the mandate, the leadership, the guidance to think pragmatically versus, hey, go be disruptive, also gives them a sense of permission and openness and a belief that they can do it in a way that being disruptive doesn't. And I mean, I think you get why I'm asking, you know where I come from, my perspective on it. I just think that the whole like blue skies disruptive, while great in little niche areas and it can go big and explode, for most people in most jobs is actually really scary and shuts down the ability to innovate when there's a lot, to your point, a lot of innovation right in front of us.
Yeah, I mean, when we say thinking pragmatically, we talked about solving problems, right? Whenever there's so many problems to solve, right? In the world, in the communities, in families, anywhere, right? So I think thinking pragmatically is what are the problems that we want to solve and then applying to that and why should this be a problem to be solved, right? It's not scary, it's quite rewarding. Right. I think it might be scary to some folks because there's accountability to it, because instead of saying, well, we're going to look at the blue sky and imagine living on a different planet, and there's nothing wrong with that. But that's just a different approach. We can say, what are the pragmatic problems that we can solve that we might be accountable for so that our planet becomes better?
Why do you think that accountability is so challenging? I'm glad you brought that up.
Actually, that's an exceptional question. I'm thinking because I every day I wake up and I kind of make the same resolutions, and this is not in a workspace, right?
Yeah.
But kind of by the end of the day, they're out of the window, right?
Right.
So I think it's human nature, right? Let me tell you, I've been trying to lose a few pounds by my birthday, which is coming up in 13 weeks and 3 days. That tells you that I'm paying attention to that metric. Right? And the gap is becoming bigger and bigger, and staying at home does not help. To be honest, I don't know. I think it's human nature.
Yeah.
It's certainly my nature.
I think you're right. I think it's a lot of our nature. I think you're right. I think I'm just, when you said that, my eyes kind of went wide, because I think we struggle with accountability. And I think being accountable also means we may have to be accountable for looking stupid, failing, not getting it right. So it's easier, I think, in some ways to not do it than it is to try really hard and fail. But you brought up something else. I know we're talking about fitness, but the gap getting bigger and bigger. I actually think that really is pretty profound. I hadn't really thought of it that way until you said that, but every day that I go by and don't work towards my goals and I'm not accountable to them, the chances of me getting there is harder and harder. I have to work harder and harder, and that's just exhausting.
Yeah, and then there is a tipping point for everything. It's and then the goal becomes unattainable, and then you can just breathe out and say, oh, let's not even bother with this. We can't achieve it, right?
Next year, for sure.
But I think
that you're kind of, what you're talking about with your fitness goals does relate to work and what we're talking about, that it's human nature to not necessarily stick to things, and that accountability can be scary because it can go both ways. I want to ask you about something else that you talk about, because to me, it's a really important part of innovation, and that's about communicating the value of innovation. And I think that's challenging on a day where everything's going right. How do you, in times of change, communicate innovation in a way that gets people on board and taking action?
Look, I think we're going back to, unfortunately or fortunately, to accountability and metrics, right?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's about declaring what the metrics we want to hit, and what are the small and measurable milestones, keeping big picture in mind, we're achieving, right? And again, talking about today, it's a perfect example, right? Because we look at what's going on in the world, and in small and measurable milestones, people are trying to go and solve a problem, be that trying to develop a vaccine or getting masks and equipment in the hands of doctors. Now, so that's one. It's about demonstrating success and value. But let me just flip it and show the other side. What is the cost of inaction? Mm-hmm. Let's just say that we don't innovate. Right. And I think in a lot of businesses, when employees and executives are disengaged, when there is a lot of disengagement, people often don't understand that there is a tremendous cost of inaction.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's a tipping point. Right. It's at a certain point. I'll go back to the Blockbuster example. Right. At a certain point, they were not paying attention to the rent by mail CD industry. Then they were not paying attention to the on-demand video. And at a certain point, it was too late. So their cost of inaction was the cost of their business.
Right. Is there a way to make the cost of inaction or quantify it in a way that's real for people? Because I think to the Blockbuster example, and to a lot of us in a lot of things, unless there's an immediate cliff, it's hard for us to understand because it's like death by 1,000 cuts or 10,000 cuts, right? Isn't that the old phrase? Where it's like almost slowly but surely until the point where it gets too late. How do you think about making that real for people?
To be honest, I don't know. It's a phenomenal question. I think it's a phenomenal business idea, right? It's definitely a phenomenal way to get people to embrace something, right? Like right now, if we think about digitization, of course, every company is going to be digital, right? Yeah. The business case is very clear. If you're not digital, you don't have a business, right? But that's not death by 1,000 cuts. It's either or. It's black and white now, right? But once everyone is digital, how do we get people to start thinking about security more?
Right.
That is another question. Right? That is another question. Yeah, that's something for me to think about. But I mean, I know you've looked at different innovator types. You've figured out a way to do assessments and kind of and risk profile and do all the wonderful things. That can kind of help companies and individuals understand where they are on this journey. How would you approach this?
You know, Alex, it's a good question. I don't have the answer either, which is kind of why I asked it, just to get the conversation going, because I don't know that any of us really do. And just to go back to your Blockbuster example, like nobody at Blockbuster could have said, you guys, if we don't up our game in 10 years, people are going to be binge watching The Tiger King. You know, like that nobody would have guessed that. That's not, you know, so hard to project. I do think that sometimes when the cost of inaction is what you're trying to show, you need to create some urgency or some chaos. And in this case, that was brought on us externally by this virus in a way that none of us expected. But I do think on a day-to-day basis, you got to show people, you got to create a little bit of urgency that maybe didn't exist before. And I'm talking a little bit in circles because truthfully, Alex, I don't know. So if those people listening could give us advice, that would be amazing. I mean, what I can tell you from our assessment, what we built, you mentioned that, is that, you know, different types of people see things differently. So if you're a futuristic, if that's your part of you, how you innovate, you'll see the future in a way the clearer than I do. I'm more of an experiential, I'm more hands-on, so I'm able to see how it all applies. And I need a futuristic to help me see how it applies to the future. But again, I think inaction is such a, it, to your point, has such a high cost, but it's so hard to make tangible.
Absolutely, and sometimes you can just kind of speaking paradoxically, sometimes you can potentially wait it out, right? Because if we think about year from today, hotel industry was rightfully worried about Airbnb.
Yeah.
If we look at where we are today, and if I were to make bets on, you know, hotel industry versus Airbnb, I'm not sure I'd be betting on the Airbnb side.
Right. But right? You would have a couple years ago, right?
I would have a year ago, absolutely. I would say, look, hotels are the future. I'm not so sure about it. Airbnb for sure, right? And right now, when you look at the company, that's behaving very, very differently and very ethically, and they're supporting guests and hosts. But if you look at their, you know, experience of being in this business, business resiliency, and other expertise, can they really be as scalable as Marriott?
No, I don't know.
I don't know.
I have to say, just very quickly, Alex, a couple things. One is, I so appreciate your willingness to say, I don't know. I think that is a really important part of true leadership is saying, I need to think about that a little bit more. And I think so many of us are unwilling to be vulnerable and to actually admit, like, I got to think about that. That is a new way or a new perspective. And I think, and especially in times of uncertainty, that vulnerability is really important. So kudos to you on that. I can't tell you the number of podcasts I've done where people just come up with answers because they don't want to look like they don't know. And I think that shows through, to be honest.
There's so many things I don't know. In fact, I love to talk about, my dad was a politician. So there's a few things that I've learned, but there are many things that I don't know that I know how to talk about. Yeah. So anytime you want me to admit, I don't know.
Well, I appreciate it. I think it's very few and far between, unfortunately. And I think it's actually a sign of true confidence and true leadership is to be able, and I think in innovation, you often have to say, I don't know. Let's go explore that. That's how you learn and discover and grow and adapt. The other thing I'll just say, just in this conversation we're having about inaction, which by the way, I just have to say for us, you know, all of the everyday innovators on Mall Street, what you just heard is a really transparent conversation between two people who are like, huh, I'm not really sure. Let's talk this through for a second. And what came out of it for me was not just the power of having those conversations in terms into getting into innovation, but also for inaction, it just kind of made me think, you know what? Maybe the way to think about this isn't, maybe my question was wrong. Maybe it's not, how do you quantify inaction or the cost of it? Maybe it's, how do we constantly have an attitude and a process that allows us to continually take action? So that is not our challenge, because, you know, you mentioned Airbnb and hotel. I'm just going to throw out there taxi versus Uber, right? Taxis were all about inaction. When Uber came on the scene, taxis had every opportunity to make changes and actually get ahead of Uber because they had the distribution, they had the trust, they had the recognized brand, like they had it really, but they didn't take action. But anyway, all that is to say, I kind of wonder if the question isn't, how do you make an action tangible? It's how do you make sure you're always staying in action? And to the title of your book, be really fearless about innovation.
Absolutely. And if I may, Uber is another example, right? At the end of the day, we have a vital part of our economy, which is transportation, which is in essence run by a lot of independent contractors or employees, depending on which state you're in and which side you're looking at. And what happens if they opt out of the system, right? What happens if they don't have healthcare, right? What happens if we don't trust to be in an Uber for health reason, right? So it's again, it's changing again, right? Yeah. And it's incredible how fluid it is. And it's just, what really makes me comfortable is, again, going back to the community, I'm seeing companies that are very transparent and ethical, and they're talking about what it is that they're doing for their employees, customers, and communities.
Mm-hmm. I think the transparency to our conversation earlier, I really hope the purpose, the transparency, the authenticity, all of that is something that sticks moving forward, that we realize that it's actually really powerful in human connection, but also in our ability to run business, our ability to innovate. I'm curious, in writing your book, Fearless Innovation, what's one thing that maybe surprised you when you kind of pulled all the research and the stories together, or just really stood out to you?
That I think at the end of the day, it's all common sense, and it comes down to accountability and looking at the problems and solving them pragmatically. And communication, right? If I think about communication, I think communication is the key. Yeah. There are lots of good ideas. There are lots of great people. It's when they learn to communicate with each other, which involves the act of listening and saying, I don't know, what do you think? Right? And being vulnerable and open in that communication, that's where magic happens. If you take that away, you can't have innovation.
I couldn't agree with you more. When someone asks me a question, sometimes what I like to do instead of answering is say, great question, what makes you ask? Because I think that you get to the layer under the layer under the layer when you take a second to listen before you launch into answering mode. It's very easy to do that. But usually what's asked on the surface is not actually the intent of the conversation. So Alice, before we have to go, where can people go to get the book and connect with you?
AlexGorchev.com.
Awesome. You have so much great advice. So my last question for you is, what's your final piece of advice for all of us trying to be fearless, be innovative, and find the opportunities and the obstacles?
What makes you ask this question?
Well done. Well played, Alex.
Sorry,
well played.
I had to do this. I was hoping for another question.
Actually, I will play along because it's absolutely true, right? This is a great example of that. I love that you said that. I'm asking you that question because I think all of us need something to hold on to help us make sense of it all. But also really start to shift our mindsets into, this is not about obstacles, this is about opportunities. And I feel like you're the type of person that would have the answer to that. So there you go.
Yeah. Look, there's an incredible amount of opportunities ahead of us. And I think what's really cool about it is there are a lot of opportunities that we can execute on today. Mm. We can connect. Every hand that you don't shake becomes a phone call, right?
Yeah.
There's so many neighbors and friends and parents, and there's so many things that we can just improve just today. And that's pretty incredible.
I also think that's very, gives me a lot of relief to go, oh, what can I do today? What can I impact today? So Alex, thank you so much. That is a great piece of wisdom to end on. I so appreciate you and everybody out there. His book is phenomenal. Go get it. And then you'll see him in my book too. So it's like a double win for people who like your work, which is most of us.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me, Tamara.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.